Welcome to the Toastmasters Podcast, the official podcast of Toastmasters International. Hello, everybody. This is Greg Gazin. Challenges come in all different shapes and forms. For one man who never viewed himself as a writer, was given a challenge to write an article for the Toastmaster magazine. Thousands of words later, that opportunity parlayed itself into an 11-year journey. He's Bill Brown, a speech delivery coach. He's been a Toastmaster for almost 20 years and a member of Energy Capital Toastmasters in Gillette, Wyoming. Bill has been writing for the Toastmaster magazine since 2014 and has the unique honor of having had a monthly column for the past 9 years. You may know him as from the Toastmasters Toolbox, The Answer Man, or just plain Bill Brown. Bill's recent column, Lessons from the Toastmaster, Discover What I Have Learned as a Writer for the Magazine, appears in the December 2025 issue of the Toastmaster magazine. Coming to us today from his home in Gillette, Wyoming, Bill Brown, welcome back to the Toastmasters podcast.
Thank you very much, Greg. Glad to be here.
I can't believe it's been almost 3.5 years since we spoke.
Yeah, I was stunned when you told me that how long ago it was, because it doesn't seem that long. But then again, I guess they say time flows quickly whenever you're getting old.
There you go. It was June 22, and the interesting thing about it is that you took a twist on a typical topic. Typically, we hear about giving feedback. Our chat was actually about accepting and implementing feedback. And for those of you who haven't had an opportunity to listen to it, it's episode 206 entitled Receiving Feedback, a Valuable Skill You Can Improve On. We'll certainly put a link to it in the show notes. Now, Bill, to kick things off, people know you as, I mentioned earlier, the Toastmasters Toolbox guy, the Answer Man. Now, given that this is going to be your final Answer Man column, how does it feel to close this particular chapter?
Interesting question. In some ways, it's like, oh my gosh, it's been a part of me for so long, it's going to be strange not to have it there. But on the other hand, there are always new challenges to work on. In fact, they told me that we're not done with you, and we have more columns for you, and or not column, actually articles. And sure enough, they called up a week later and said, hey, we got one for the January issue. So in one way, it hasn't changed. In another way, it's just kind of strange not to be thinking, what's the next column?
I'm almost thinking of the Hotel California, the song by the Eagles. You can check out anytime you like, but you can never leave.
That's true.
And that's great, Bill, because I always look forward to your columns and wonder what's new and exciting in the Toastmasters toolbox this month. Now, Bill, something that I rarely do is reach out to the magazine ahead of time and ask them if there's a particular question that they want me to ask of our guest. Because I'm sure most of you are aware, we typically tie all of our episodes of the podcast to magazine articles. So when I did reach out, they seemed quite glad that I did. They asked if you had a favorite topic that you've written about for them over the years.
I think my favorite topic is really the one that's right in my wheelhouse, that is speech delivery. I just enjoy training on that, speaking on that, writing on that. It's kind of hard to write about speech delivery, but that's just part of the challenge. But I think in that regard, that's really where I'm at, because I want people to take their speaking skills to the next level. People need a picture of what that really is. But that's what I enjoy.
Now, of course, that's a broad topic, and I appreciate the fact that they asked what was your favorite topic rather than your favorite article. Now, since you mentioned speech delivery, is there a particular part of speech delivery that really resonates with you and that's something that you're very passionate about that you wanted to share about it?
I think one area of speech delivery, and again, this really touches in significantly on vocal variety. Speech delivery, or expressiveness as I call it, also includes body language and facial expressions. But the one area that I just is a hot button for me is the cadence. To really, you know, somebody once said that the written word is for the words, but the spoken word is for the rhythm, for the cadence. There's a certain cadence that you get into that's just a pleasure to listen to. So I enjoy speaking to try to make the words flow like you would a song. If a song didn't have a certain beat to it, you'd turn off the radio or whatever you were listening to. You'd never buy it. You'd never want to listen to it. But there's a certain rhythm that a song has, and that that is included in your spoken word whenever you speak. And I think that makes your speeches that much more effective.
Oh, I agree. I'm going to put you on the spot and give you a little table topic. Can you perhaps recite something or give us an example of one? I would love to hear it.
This is an example that I use when I'm training on speech delivery, and it's actually from a segment from a speech by Douglas MacArthur called Duty, Honor, Country. And let's see if I can recall it. Duty, honor, country. Those three hallowed words reverently dictate what you ought to be, what you can be, and what you will be.
Awesome. Thank you so much for that. Now, I'm also wondering, of course, you talk about things that you're passionate about. Was there a column perhaps that you wrote or a topic that you wrote on that you thought, oh, I'm not sure if this is going to resonate, but it did?
Nothing comes to mind, to be honest with you. I mean, there were some columns, it's like there were a challenge to write, and you kind of get into it and realize, oh, okay, I can do this. And I think that some of the ones that I've really enjoyed researching were like, okay, what are some of the inner workings of behind pathways? Or like one I think I really enjoyed was, and this may not be an answer to your question, but it may be of pathways. When it first came out, a lot of us old timers were having trouble finding and navigating within that. And all of the trainings were done by people that knew every specific intricate way of doing it. And there were always 14, modest exaggeration, 14 ways of doing, getting to where you wanted to get to. I'm sitting there going, tell me one and confuse me with the rest. Did some research there and spent some time talking with the crowd down there at TI and learned just, okay, what's the best way to get in? And just writing that article, had some folks say, gee, thanks for doing that. I now get it. Hopefully it made people comfortable with pathways where at a start, there were some of us that were struggling with it.
It's like going into an electronics shop and asking them how your computer works for someone who's brand new to computers. They say, here you go. They go A, B, C, D, E, F, G. And it's like, no. Let's start with A.
You got it.
Have you had any memorable or surprising feedback from your readers? Is there something that you had written something and perhaps you got an email or a phone call that just blew your mind?
One was interesting. I wrote an article one time. See, my club here, I am in a small club that's out there basically in the middle of nowhere. Wyoming is a big state. We are literally the only club in northern Wyoming. It's a town of about 33, 34,000 people. And the question is, where do you find people for members? Who do you contact? There's nobody here. I mean, the main industries here are mining, coal mining, and ranching. And let me tell you, the cattle herders don't do too much speaking. I wrote an article there because there are a lot of clubs that are out there basically saying, hey, there are a ton of places within the city that need speaking, among them like the local politicians that are running. I actually trained some of our local politicians on speaking that have never spoken before just so they can get up in front of people and sound like they know what they're talking about. But I wrote that article and I actually got a call from the club growth director of our district saying, thanks for writing that. Gosh, I've got somebody in Western Colorado out in the middle of nowhere thinking of starting a club and she's got to read this article. Yeah, I really like getting that feedback there to know that I was helping people in similar situations to ourselves.
Well, that's awesome. Can you recall the title of the article?
No, to be honest with you, when I write an article and I send it in, I'm focused on the next article, and I don't recall. Probably would have been about a year ago.
Well, we can certainly look it up and put the information in the show notes. So let's go back. Let's rewind a little bit. And how did you first discover Toastmasters, and what was it that brought you into the fold?
I had been doing some voiceover narration. In order to get clients, I did some networking, and they said, gee, would you like to MC our meetings? Oh, okay, well, sure. You know, any time to demonstrate the voice to somebody who could hire you is always a good thing. And I realized that I was much better in front of a live audience with my own words than walking into a small padded room and reading somebody else's words. I decided I wanted to focus in on speaking and started plugging into the National Speakers Association. I was living in Southern California at the time. We were in a mentorship group, and I was talking to somebody there who was in the same situation as I, and I said, he mentioned he was a Toastmaster, and I says, well, you can talk. What's the deal here? He says, no. I'm learning it to develop topics. And I'm thinking, whoa, I need to develop topics too. So I started looking at it there. He attended a meeting and said, yeah, I need this. Ultimately, I realized, came to the realization that not only did I need to use it to develop topics, I really needed it to develop my speaking skills because I wasn't really where I needed to be. So that's how I got started.
So let's go a little further forward. Your first article, I understand, came from a casual conversation with Jeannie Harris. And if you replay that moment today, what was it that you think maybe she heard in your answer that made her say, this needs to be in the magazine?
I was at the meeting. I was an area governor at the time, area director for those of you that haven't been around for as long as I have. But I was also a club VPE, VP Education. It was a large club. People kept saying, great, what do I do now? I just finished my basic manual. Where do I go from here? For those of you that weren't here then, we had 16 advanced manuals. In order to become a DTM, you needed 6. Which ones do you pick? And I had a system there where I said, well, start with this one here. And then I recommend you do this one second because it's a skill you need, probably storytelling. And then I had a couple others for the next two. And then here are my recommendations for the next three. I remember one of them was the humorous manual. I said to her, and the humorous manual is the only manual with an objective standard. If they don't laugh, you weren't funny. The idea that I had a system with a little bit of humor, but again, had a system that was well thought out. She went, huh, okay. Because again, for whatever reason, she asked me the question, just out of thin air. She said, and what do you recommend for that? Fortunately, I had the answer, but I think what she heard was that, okay, this is something more than just somebody, it's more than a table topics answer. Let's put it that way.
Mm-hmm. So of course, that interaction spearheaded your journey or started off or kickstarted your journey.
Yeah. Yeah.
How did that interaction shape your path as a writer?
If we go back to my high school days, you would realize that if you've talked to my high school English teacher, you would realize I am not a writer, or at least wasn't at that time. So I always thought of myself as, I am not a writer. I don't want to go anywhere near that. I can talk. You know, I was born to be behind a microphone, but writing, no. But I accepted the challenge. Sure, why not? You know, give it a shot. I found out, wow, okay, that worked well. I was able to formulate my ideas in a succinct format. I don't know, a few months later, I got another email. Hi, would you like to do another article? Really? Okay, sure. Ultimately, you go through enough of these iterations. And initially, it was a matter of, okay, what do you tell somebody like somebody brand new how to work with the basic manual and all of that? I have an engineering degree, so I do think systematically, mainly starting with that. And then later on, it's a matter of, okay, now let's relate a little bit more and developing the style to the point whereby it's something that people want to read as opposed to something that's mechanically helpful.
In the article you mentioned about, you said your first draft came in at about 900 words and you needed surgery down to 750.
Almost every time I write an article, it comes out at 900 words. It's within plus or minus 10. It's really weird. And so, yeah, major surgery is required. And I think that's a skill, as I said in the article, that's absolutely essential for speakers, especially Toastmasters. I've seen too many of them that write their speech the night before and they deliver their rough draft and it sounds that way. But if you can really work it, get the timing to exactly where you want it and work out the flow, the cadence, just make it comfortable to speak, then you're doing great.
So it sounds like this editing discipline that you learned also, it also related back to your speaking as well.
Oh, absolutely. Basically, my writing is actually written for the spoken word. It's more conversational. Again, I go for the flow because when I read something, I'm actually reading it in my mind. I was told that's a terrible thing to do if you want to be a fast reader. And I says, well, I don't care about being a fast reader. I want to understand what I'm saying. It definitely helped me as a speaker as well to make the speeches tight and that they flow and they're easy to say, especially for, you know, I've been involved in a number of speech contests. That's really when it's critical. The speeches have to flow there, and that they involve a lot of editing and surgery and everything else.
Mm. If you look back at your first article or your early writing days, what would your younger Toastmaster self be most surprised about today?
I guess that it lasted so long. One, that my gosh, I was writing for like 8-9 years and they kept coming back. Also to the point whereby I've said, you know, maybe I ought to focus more on writing than on speaking. Just because when you write, it's there. You can put it in a book form, and then all of a sudden, if it's something that people want to read, you can put it on Amazon and they'll buy it, and you don't have to schedule another speaking gig.
Yeah. You can repurpose. You can create audiobooks and written articles and do speeches. Yeah.
Absolutely. There's a lot you can do with it.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about a couple of articles and, of course, some of the teachable moments, because every column that you write, there's all kinds of information in it, humor, and, of course, there's lots of takeaways. Your recent article, how much of my speech should I memorize? What sparked that idea, and was there a Toastmasters moment behind it? And if you could share just a little bit about that one.
That one, I believe, was probably one of the Toastmaster Answer Man columns.
Yes.
They asked me to write about that. Somebody had written in and says, how much should I memorize? It really depends. I'm a big fan of memorization, mainly because if you don't have your speech memorized, if you're just reading, and very few people are good readers. I've done voiceover narration. I'm a trained reader. I still memorize my speeches because I'm better than if I read it. But most people, it's a flat read. It's just boring. But if people then memorize the speech a little bit, you're sitting there thinking, okay, what am I going to say next? What am I going to say next? You're not thinking about relating to the audience. You're not thinking about expressing yourself. Your expressiveness is a good part of your communication. Again, you're not as effective, but if you memorize it, and then you can really connect with the audience and give the emotion that it takes. And when I say emotion, I'm not talking about, oh my gosh, whatever, you know, the crying or anything like that. But it's just a matter of anything that you have will connect with the audience. You're communicating with the audience in how you say it. So memorize it if you can. Now, a long speech, if it's a long form, a 20-minute speech, I'm not going to memorize that, but I'll know it well enough that I can put a title. Hi, talk about this next. Okay, bam, I got 5 minutes. I know I can talk. I know the subject well enough. I can talk for 5 minutes without notes. Okay, what's the next topic? And go from there.
So it sounds like the benefits of memorization is that you already know what the words are going to be, so you're then freed up to focus in on the delivery.
Exactly.
But the downside is, and this has happened to me, I competed in a humorous speech contest at our district. And overall in our district was quite large before we had split into two. Mm-hmm. We figured there were probably about 900 people that probably started at the beginning. And I came in third. Mm-hmm. I didn't win. Mm-hmm. So I was asked to give that humorous speech at a at a demonstration meeting.
Right.
In the middle of that speech, which I had memorized, I tried to insert the word of the day.
Oops.
And I lost my place.
Oops.
And I had to start again. Yeah, I really messed myself up. And thankfully, I didn't do that at the actual contest itself. And for those of you who are curious, the speech is entitled Much Ado About Gadgets. It's sort of a Shakespearean take on going in and trying to buy a computer.
Nice. I actually blanked once. I was in a district speech contest, international. I made the mistake of changing some of the words earlier that day, and I blanked. I was able to recover well enough and ended up taking third place. I would not have taken second or higher either way. The other two guys were that much better than I was. But still, it's a matter of, oh no, what do I do? Okay, you know, just all of a sudden, the computer in your brain is going, you know, where was I? Oh yeah, that. It's a terrible feeling, let me tell you.
Yep, I've been there, sadly. Now, of course, you talk a lot about humor. And I'm looking back, this was one of the articles you had written back in December 2020. And since you had mentioned that once you've written an article, you've moved on, so I'll just refresh your memory. It was called Make Your Speeches Something to Laugh At. And I absolutely Love this one. And in this article, your goal was to give people tips to discover your funny bone. And one of the elements I really enjoyed in the article was when you talked about the alternate meaning.
The alternate, right. One of the tidbits that I use, and it's interesting, about last month, somebody asked me about that at our club meeting, and I said the same thing. Okay, first of all, in my past, I will admit it, I've been a punster for a long, long time. I think puns are a way of really developing your humor ability, because in a pun, you're always thinking, what else can this mean? Just the sound, sometimes the sound can mean something different. And if you take it the way that it obviously was not meant to be said, that can be funny because it's the unexpected. What I did in that prompted the question in my local, it was actually a tabletop-based question in my local club meeting. The question was, when was your first conscious thought that you can remember? Okay, obviously they're asking how old, like 2, 3 years old, whatever. Well, there's also another way that can be meant. We have an early club meeting. We meet at 6:30 in the morning. And I said, well, my first thought was at 4:30 this morning when the alarm clock went off. And then I riffed, went back, okay, what you really mean is this, and I answered the question. But I took it a different direction. Sometimes that can be a different word that sounds the same. That's an example of an alternate meaning where they were not expecting that, and I got a big laugh out of that.
The other one was Las Vegas. Yeah. Tell us about that one.
I was living in Las Vegas at the time, and people occasionally I would be asked, are you a vegan? And I say, no, but I'm a Las Vegan.
Oh, wow. And then the other one was about the something that happened in the past.
That speech where I blanked, I was actually a little bit later. I had said a line that implied something that was talking about something that happened at my university 100 years ago. And the way I said it could have been taken as sounded like, were you there? I could tell just the way people, the audience was reacting. They're thinking, oh my gosh, was he saying he was there? This is weird. And so I said, I got to recover from this. And I just said, well, I know what you're thinking, but no, I wasn't there at the time, which they laughed. What I wish I had done, if I had not blanked, taken up a little bit of time earlier, I would have said, I know what you're thinking, but no, I wasn't there that day. I was out of town.
And I think you're referencing something back into like the 1800s or something.
Something like that, yes. And it, again, so that way they just knew that, again, I would love to have said that. If I ever give that speech again, I may include that. I may work that into the speech, but yeah, but it's just, again, an alternate meaning there that it can be taken. Sometimes they take it the wrong way. And again, that's where the puns come in, because I was used to thinking on my feet. And I realized, oh, I need to say something quickly here. And an alternate quickly came to mind.
Yeah. I know people feel that it's important to put humor, and they might say, well, you know, I'm not really funny and I can't say funny things. These tips are extremely helpful for that. And it's funny because sometimes things just happen by chance. I recall doing club officer training, and I did some club officer training on a Wednesday evening, and I told a little joke to break the ice. Right. I can't recall exactly what it was. So I gave this, and I thought, hey, I got a good laugh. So I gave that same joke on the Saturday morning training, and it fell flat. Then I said out loud, well, I guess it kind of worked on Wednesday night. And then I thought to myself, make note to self, do not deliver this joke before noon. And that actually got a laugh. So anytime I did a morning training, I would use that type of humor, and it actually worked.
Self-deprecating humor is usually quite effective.
Yeah. Now, of course, humor could also be very subjective. That also leads me to the question. You write for the Toastmaster magazine. It is a global audience, and I know that writing for a global audience is a skill. What was the biggest adjustment that you feel you had to make, if any, to ensure that the advice that you delivered resonated internationally?
When I first started, and again, we always have an editor in this that goes through it. When I first started in my first few articles, my wording was a little bit too esoteric to either the U.S. or to Southern California. And the editor would send me the comment, okay, now, this is an international audience. They may not know what you're talking about. How can you restate that? And it got me thinking over time that, oh, I need to think about this when I'm writing the first time, when I'm doing my initial edits before I submit the article, and got me thinking, okay, I need to think of the listener and who is listening, what do they know, what makes sense to them, rather than stay in a writer-speaker mode, write as if I am the reader. And I think that was the biggest adjustment that I made.
Think like a listener, write as if you're the reader.
Yeah.
I love that. Yeah. Bill, that's sage advice. And folks, if you've gained a lot of insight from listening to our conversation with Bill, I highly encourage you to share this episode with your friends and family and fellow Toastmasters. You can find the Toastmasters podcast at toastmasterspodcast.com, toastmasters.org, Apple, Spotify, and anywhere you get your podcasts. And don't forget to check out Bill's Answer Man article, Lessons from the Toastmaster, Discover What I Have Learned as a Writer for the Magazine, in the December 2025 issue of the Toastmaster Magazine. And Bill, I know you sort of alluded to it at the beginning as you share your last tool from your Toastmasters toolbox and your final answer as the Answer Man. You close the article with a call to action for others. What's next for Bill Brown?
I am in the process of developing, among other things, a speech delivery training. That's my forte, and that'll be announced on the website and my email list and all of that. But again, I'm looking at writing. I've got some books in mind and some other keynotes, speeches, and that I will be out speaking, some of them locally, some of them hopefully on a larger audience. But yeah, as far as Toastmasters is concerned, they have indicated to me that they're not done with me yet either. In fact, not only will you see my last column in December, you'll see an article in the January issue. So I'm still going to be around here, still be writing and speaking for Toastmasters. And if you wanted to reach out to me, the best place is probably to go to my website, billbrownspeechcoach.com. It's got all the contact information there. Feel free to email me, feel free to call if you need to. Glad to answer your questions and help out and encourage you along the way.
And we'll certainly put that information in the show notes. Bill Brown, thank you so much for spending the time speaking with me today. And of course, your wisdom over the years has been much appreciated, and we look forward to more.
Thank you, Greg. Appreciate the opportunity to chat with you here on the Toastmaster Podcast.